Welcome to 2018, where either you post it or it ain't happen.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We're sticking in the Western Conference for today's season preview show. We're going to be looking at the Sacramento Kings, a team again who is always confusing in terms of trying to work out how things are going to play out. To speak about the Sacramento Kings, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Kings podcast, and that is Matt George. Matt, welcome to the show for the first time.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad to know that there are going to be some fans that are paying attention to some hidden gems that are on this Kings roster for your fantasy season. You're certainly not going to be looking at too many of these names for top overall picks, but I'm telling you, if you want some guys that are going to get you some sneaky points and some stat sheet stuffers, there are a couple of names in here that you're going to want to pay attention to.
Well, you're right about that. There's not going to be many guys who are right up the top. In fact, that they're probably one of the only teams that project to not have a top 50 guy for this coming season, but there's a bunch of guys in that back end of rounds of the drafts where you can have a look and see where that value can appear. We're going to try and talk about how that could potentially play out, how the rotations are going to play out, and what we can expect from some of these players in today's show. But Matt, we'll start off by talking about the projected record for this team. In a true host fashion, you have gone over the Vegas over under of 25.5 and put them down at 31-51. Why do you see the Kings taking a big step forward? Because last year they weren't great and they did that with a lot of luck as well. So that's a big step forward you're expecting for Sacramento this season.
So I have always been labeled, especially here in Sacramento at the radio station in KHDK that I work for in Sacramento, I've always been labeled the optimist, sometimes the blind optimist, which I own and I take to another level. I'm actually very optimistic about this team moving forward. I'm looking at the win totals for two major reasons, but the big one that I'm trying to focus people to pay attention to is that the Sacramento Kings did have a lot better of performance. So they were a lot more consistent of a team last year on the road than we've seen in quite some time. A lot of their success, especially early on in the season, came on the road before so many teams begun their tanking. Now I'm aware that there are going to be less teams most likely this year that are going to be tanking towards the end of the season. So closing out the year may be tough. But if you're actually looking at the Sacramento Kings schedule, they have a lot of road games early on against Eastern Conference opponents. 7 of their first 10 games are on the road, and while many would look at that as potentially a bad thing or a negative thing for this team, I view that as a potential positive for this team to work out the Kings and get going right away. And a lot of those road games early on are against some of the weaker opponents in the Eastern Conference. If the Kings are going to make a significant jump and really turn some heads and be what they want to be at the end of the season, which isn't necessarily a playoff team, but a team that's showing flashes that you can see a clear direction and maybe see them making the postseason in another year or two down the road, it's going to begin with holding your own both at home and on the floor against Eastern Conference opponents. And Josh, I think this year is going to be a major year for the Kings, a lot of success against the East.
Lots of optimism there, obviously, Matt. But before we get into more information on the Sacramento Kings, the Locked On Podcast Network is now locked onto college. Today, we are launching the college channel for the Locked On Podcast Network. So if you're a fan of Alabama, of Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, or BYU, go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts and follow along with your favorite college for free. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Now, the projected leading scorer on this team is also the guy you've got listed as a breakout player, and that is Buddy Hield, who I thought impressed at times last season, wasn't able to nail down a starting spot and only played 25 minutes per game. To me, from the outside, it seems like the Kings view him as a microwave-type bench player, as a sixth man. They just didn't give him that opportunity last season, but big steps forward. He's always been efficient, 43% from three. We saw that, but what he was able to do is up his steal rate quite considerably. The assist rate also improved last season for Bud. So I guess the big question is the 25 minutes per game that Buddy played last season, is that something that we're looking to build on significantly? a marginal increase. Will he start? Are we talking 32 minutes? Are we talking 28 minutes? What are we looking at for Heald as he heads into his third season and his second full year in Sacramento?
Well, it's always fun to try and predict the rotations and what's going through the brain of head coach Dave Yeager, although I have full confidence in Dave Yeager as a head coach. However, what I will tell you is that this team has been built, especially through this summer, to emphasize a run-and-gun, high offensive intensity style system with sacrifices on the defensive end. I think they made that pretty clear by selecting Marvin Bagley with the number two overall pick. Where Buddy Hield fits into that, as far as I'm concerned and as far as what we believe here in Sacramento, Buddy Hield is going to be upwards of around a 35 minutes per game type player. Wow. I would be shocked, quite honestly, if he is not starting at the two spot. That would I would be surprised if he's not starting at the two and Bogdanovich is not starting at the three. But we'll have to wait and see what they do. But most importantly, Buddy Hield on a nightly basis is going to be on the floor in the fourth quarter at the end of games in large stretches. You mentioned he improved a lot on the defensive end of the floor, which helps him through those scoring droughts. And again, coming back with the optimism, but this is something I firmly believe, and it's something we've seen Buddy Hield work on throughout this summer. If he adds the ability to create his own shot, not just a stop-and-pop shooter or can receive the ball in transition, but if Buddy Hield has added the ability or at least some kind of consistent ability to create his own shot and to get to the line, I think he's going to be not only the top scorer on this team, he can potentially be in the running for most improved player by the end of the season.
That's huge. The 35 minutes is a massive, massive call. I'll push back on that. I don't think he's getting that because, Matt, I'm sure you know this, but how many players played 30 minutes a night for the Kings last season?
Very few to none. I would say the closest would probably be Zach Randolph, correct.
It was Cauley Stein at 28 and Bogdanovich at 27.9 minutes. They were the only two that even got close to 30 minutes. Jaeger's rotations were all over the place. Now, I'd love to see consistency from what he does on a night-to-night basis or even rotations that make sense half the time. But I agree with you that Hield is going to be the leading scorer on this team. I think he's going to be their top fantasy producer for this season. If he can add that ability to create for himself and for others, that's huge. The steal rate jumped up. The efficiency was there. He does need to get to the line, though, and that's something that he struggled with considerably. This whole team was historically low in terms of getting to the free throw line last year, just a horribly low free throw rate. So if they can get that bumped back up, that'll help a lot of their players' value as well. And I think Hield's a strong mid-round type of guy. He's ranked 71 on Yahoo. I think he can exceed that number. Can he get to 20 points per game? I mean, I'm not sure about that, but he can put up some pretty strong numbers. And if he is getting 32 minutes a night or up to that level, then yeah, he's probably going to be a top 50, top 45 type of option potentially. So he does have that with that really high efficiency and get those. If he gets to the line two extra times per game, that's another 2 points on there. Plus, it's way more value in that free throw percentage category. So it is something that is interesting to see if they do run with that Hield Bogdanovich lineup. How many times did they start together last season? I don't recall it happening very often at all, as much as I was calling for it pretty much all season.
A little to none. Buddy Hield actually really only started at the beginning of the season, and his inconsistent shot and his lack of really defensive production to get him through those droughts, and that's been an issue with Buddy Hield, is that we've seen consistently is every once in a while he'll shoot himself into droughts, shoot himself out of ball games early. If he misses his first three or four shots, his confidence drops. That's something he turned around and worked through quite well towards the end of the season. But starting, the two of them never started together, although you saw them finishing games consistently together, which is why I think we're going to see a lot more of that across the board next season.
The other thing we have to take into consideration is that Garrett Temple, the guy who was taking a lot of those minutes at the two and the three, is no longer in Sacramento, replaced by Ben McLemore, who just won't see the court. So I don't think we need to worry too much about that. Yes, they did bring in Yogi Ferrell as well, who can play at the one and the two, but surely we'll be seeing Bogdanovich and Hield prioritized over Ferrell there. As of this point, Matt, there's only one two-way guy signed with the Kings, and that's Wenyen Gabriel, who played, you know, I thought he played okay in Summer League. There is a lot of depth in that front court, and he does play in the front court. It just seems unlikely that he is going to get much of an opportunity this season.
Yes, that's a pretty accurate statement. I think he's going to be a hustle guy, someone that they're going to bring in maybe towards the tail end of the season, depending upon how good or bad the Sacramento Kings record is. I've been on the record saying, and I still firmly believe this, the roster that you see right now with the Sacramento Kings and the the amount of big men that they have in that front court is not going to be the roster that begins on opening night. I still think we have a trade or some kind of move coming by the Sacramento Kings to relieve some of that pressure in the front court. If not, then we'll certainly have moves coming by the trade deadline to loosen that. So I wouldn't expect, as of right now, there's zero playing time available for Gabriel. And if any time is going to open up, it's going to be probably around the trade deadline. I would hasten to guess you're seeing maybe a 5-minute stint here or there when the Kings are either being blown out or blowing a team out, or it's at the end of the season when losses matter, I suppose.
Last year, they had one of the slowest paces in the NBA, despite being one of the youngest teams in the NBA with, I think, there was like 8 or 9 guys on rookie-scale contracts on this team. Yes, there was a Zach Randolph that was clogging things up, but basically they were young. And it's the same case here. So what makes us think, and what's the change in philosophy from Jaeger that you think is going to make them play significantly faster? Because they should have been playing a lot faster last year, but they just refused to.
That's a great question, and my easy answer to that, quite frankly, is the fact that jobs are on the line. And Vlade Divac has certainly felt the pressure from the fan base, from the organization, from his ownership, and from himself. He put a time limit upon himself, knowing full well that should things not work out, most likely this season, going into next season, if there's not clear improvement this season, that he's on the out, which means Dave Yeager's not far behind him. The Kings, once again, doubled down on this idea that they want to play fast, want to play in transition by going out and getting an athletic big that was more a better fit with a fast-paced De'Aaron Fox than I suppose if the Kings had gone out and gotten Luka Doncic, more maybe a half-court style, run the offense kind of facilitator. So specifically to answer your question, also, I can speak to having been near the bench, been in practices, been in camps, watching this team work. Dave Yeager has emphasized speed and has done that going back to last season and didn't necessarily always get those results. A lot of that, De'Aaron Fox said himself, was on him. He wanted to grow. He said this summer that he wanted to grow as an offensive leader, as a floor general, someone who is Chris Paul-like that demands that his team run with him. I will say this, though. The Kings will not be in the bottom half of the league in pace this season. If they are, it's a colossal failure for this franchise, for this organization, and that means Dave Yeager and Vlade Divac are not part of this organization by next summer, and I can say that confidently.
That's great news for fantasy in terms of if they do play at a faster pace, because that just means more possessions, more rebounds, assists, blocks, shots, steals, all that sort of stuff. So that's important to know that if they are going to be doing that, that does reflect quite positively for a number of their players and probably jumps them up a little bit more than anticipated if that's the case. For this team in terms of their overall fantasy numbers, just getting that extra pace is quite a key point with many teams. Let's have a look.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, sorry.
The player most likely to be traded, you talked about it already in terms of the big men crunch. We've got Willie Cauley-Stein, Marvin Bagley, Scal Labissiere, Harry Giles, Zach Randolph, Kostas Koufos, Deontay Davis. These are 7 big men on the roster already. You've said that Kostas Koufos is most likely to be traded. That thins it out a little bit. Do you see maybe multiple moves being made to get rid of some of these front court pieces?
Yes, I do. I think Kostas Koufos is the most likely piece of value that the Kings will be willing to move on from at the trade deadline. We've also been saying that for the past couple of years. Kostas Koufos, certainly not a guy necessarily for guys who are interested in fantasy. Kostas Koufos doesn't always jump off the page because he doesn't blow up a stat column, but he's one of those intangible guys, those necessary guys that every team likes to have, and coming off the bench is useful for any program. So I believe Kostas Koufos will be probably the best trade bait that the Kings have, unless a full-on blow-up is coming and they want to move a Bogdanović or a Buddy Hield. But he is not the only move. Like I said, I don't think Zach Randolph or Kostas Koufos are probably going to be on this team by the end of the season. I think they're going to be going all in or doubling down on the pair of Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley. I also wouldn't be surprised at all to see Scal Labissiere potentially dealt here in the next year to a young asset going out to potentially get either a draft pick or another decent asset in return. There are going to be some big men on the move here in Sacramento. I would be very, very surprised if not two of those 3 names that I mentioned are not here.
That's I've heard that multiple times from Kings people about this front court and them going away from Randolph and Kufos, and them even suggesting that they're not going to be playing every night parts of the rotation, and they are going to be focusing on that Bagley and Giles combination. So do you think that we're just not going to see Randolph A starting and B in the lineup every night?
I certainly hope not. Zach Randolph to me is a fantastic veteran presence, someone that I actually would like to see Marvin Bagley learn from. If you are talking about the biggest weaknesses and holes in Marvin Bagley's game that we saw, a lot of people would talk about his lack of a right hand, and other people would talk about his lack of strength. He struggled to back down players like Jordan Bell against the Golden State Warriors, which we saw in the California Classic. Zach Randolph has had to deal with both of those issues. Zach Randolph is a big man who is capable of backing players down, so you have that to teach Marvin Bagley. Zach Randolph is also pretty one-dimensional with only one hand, but he's managed to make a career out of that, been very successful. So he's someone that I think can teach a lot to Marvin Bagley, but that's in practice, and that's maybe from the bench, and that's off the floor. Zach Randolph does not fit at all with the identity of where the Sacramento Kings are trying to go and where they should go, which is all about pace. This team should be running all 48 minutes, trying to out-hustle their opponents. There really is no excuse for a team as young as this Kings team is to not run any given night, especially because they're not going to, save their stamina for a deep playoff run. They're not worried about anything like that. They're trying to go and trying to push and going to be trying to outrun their opponents on a nightly basis. Zach Randolph simply can't do that. The only time I see Zach Randolph getting playing time other than injuries is if they need some buckets, nobody is scoring, and they just need someone to put the ball in the basket for them. Other than that, I don't see Zach Randolph as any kind of piece of this team consistently going forward.
He played way too much last season, in my opinion. He was bad when he played. He was bad offensively. He was bad defensively. Look, he got buckets when he needed to get buckets, but he just bogged down everything else in the offense. He stifled the development of other guys, I thought, just by the way that they played and just gave him the ball, and everyone just stood around, and he just backed guys down and did that sort of thing. I'm glad to hear, and this is from multiple people now, that he won't be in every night part of the rotation. That's great for the value of these guys. But the combination I keep hearing is Bagley and Giles. Where does that leave Willie Cauley-Stein as he heads into his fourth season? Is he going to be the starter for how long? Do they not view him as a piece of the future? And why last season did they only give him 28 minutes a game?
Willie Cauley-Stein has to prove first and foremost that he can be consistent on a nightly basis. I'm a big fan of Willie Cauley-Stein. I also know that on a contract year, he feels the pressure from his agency. He's putting the pressure on himself to be good. We just don't know what Willie Cauley-Stein really is. I actually talked about this recently in the most recent episode of the Locked On Kings podcast. If I were to sit down and ask you, what is Willie Cauley-Stein? You could tell me what he's like or his potential, but you couldn't necessarily consistently tell me what he provides on a nightly basis. He has to answer that question for himself first and foremost. And before the Kings really decide what they're going to do with him or where they're going to go. Starting the season, they are going to be starting most likely with Willie Cauley-Stein at the five. I would not be surprised to see them pair him alongside either Giles or Bagley. I don't think it's a good decision to start the two of them playing together and give them a lot of minutes together right out of the gate. I would not be surprised if he saw maybe a starting rotation of Giles and Willie Cauley-Stein at the four and five, and then off the bench it was a pairing of Bagley Kufos. However that may work out, we'll have to wait and see with that. Willie Cauley-Stein to me is someone that I would like to see reach his potential because I still think he can be very valuable on this Kings team going forward. But if you were to ask me today, if we have the same Willie Cauley-Stein at the end of the season that we have today, there's no reason the Kings are going to be interested in paying him when they have Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles that they can mold and already probably have a better idea of what they can be consistently night in, night out.
Cauley-Stein was the 115th ranked player last season, but he doesn't block shots. His steals are okay. He doesn't score huge amounts. He's a poor free throw shooter. And with that challenge of Bagley and Giles coming there, I think his upside is pretty limited. His rank is around about the right spot, 138 on Yahoo. That's about right in those last couple of rounds. And maybe he does take a step forward heading into his fourth season. But again, there's just so many big men there around that there is, really, I guess, limits on what he can do in terms of absolutely blowing up. And if he's still is going along and chugging along at that average sort of level, he's just not going to get that opportunity to take those steps forward and be that guy. So there's a bit of variance, but not much upward variance in what Cauley-Stein can do, I believe, for this team. But let's pivot this to Bagley now. The number two pick, I wasn't a fan of the pick. I've been on record of saying that. I don't think Bagley's an overall great fantasy guy at this point. Again, lack of steals, lack of blocks, lack of assists, poor efficiency from the field and from the line. But he is a very good rebounder and he can score. I have my doubts with what Bagley's going to do this season, because Dave Yeager's been a guy that not only hates playing rookies, but hates playing young guys in general. So I worry about how many minutes Bagley's going to get. But how do you see it? Do you think that Yeager's going to break that mold from his time in Sacramento and Memphis and go, you know what, let's put our young guy out there? Or is it going to be a slow process?
He's going to have to, or he's gone. His job's over. And I think he knows that. I think also Dave Yeager knows better than you or I or anybody the right way to develop talent based off of his history and his pedigree. Dave Yeager spent a lot of time and had a lot of success in the minor leagues of basketball, professional basketball all over the world. Now, that's not the NBA, and I'm not going to use that as an excuse for how he has performed in the NBA. Quite frankly, he cannot afford to get away with not playing Marvin Bagley, putting him out there, not putting Harry Giles out there for decent minutes tonight, because that's what the Kings are investing in. If Bagley was taken maybe the eighth or ninth pick, there'd be a little more leeway. But because he's the number two pick in what was considered to be a very strong draft, plus the amount of skepticism surrounding that pick, the Kings are going to want to show that Bagley was the right pick right out of the gate, and want to see star power, or at least a crucial key guy to pair alongside De'Aaron Fox for the foreseeable future. I think Bagley is going to get the opportunity to get to play consistently. Maybe not early on in the season. I'm skeptical that he will actually start. I would most likely expect him to be around 20-25 minutes a night max for the first maybe quarter of the season. I will also agree with you in terms of fantasy-wise, he's not going to be the greatest guy to go out and get unless it's very deep in the draft or you just need someone. The best that Bagley's going to give you is a double-double, and it's going to be low-scoring double-double and maybe 10 or 11 rebounds max. I'm looking at if Marvin Bagley can provide the Kings with 12 points and 8 rebounds a night, or 13 points, 10 rebounds a night, that is ultimately a win for this franchise. That is the best-case scenario for him this season, and that's something I don't expect him to reach. Now, I could be proved wrong, and I hope to be proved wrong, but I don't see him reaching that until towards the latter part of the season.
Yeah, that's basically almost what I've got him projected at, 12.5 and 7.5 for this season. But he's not going to be hitting big volumes of threes or steals or blocks, and he's going to do it inefficiently, and he's going to shoot a not great free throw percentage as well. Now, if he can get the block numbers up, which he did at Summer League, very small sample, of course, if he can get those up, then that does help him. But I do have my concerns there. Yahoo's got him ranked 197th. That's probably a bit low. ESPN has him ranked 69th, which is ridiculously high. But you want to grab him in one of those later rounds, and maybe, but you see, if he's playing 22 minutes a night for the first 2 months, and don't worry about it, because his ceiling is not that high, as we've discussed here, just in this first season, as we get ready to see what he's going to be able to do in the NBA again. I still think he can be a valuable player at some point. I'm not as convinced on him as some other guys that were drafted around that same area, and for this season especially, I do not see him being a consistent top 100 type of a player for all the reasons that we have discussed already. The projected starting five for this team, Matt, you've gone with De'Aaron Fox, Bud Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Bagley, and Cauley Stein. Let's start with De'Aaron Fox out of that group. He started behind George Hill last season, came on at the end of the year, but I wouldn't call it necessarily an excellent rookie season. Played 28 minutes a night, averaged 11.5 with 4.5 assists and a steal. The shooting, which was always going to be a concern, was a concern. But he looked too good in Summer League in that first game. He looked aggressive. He was attacking the rim. He looked noticeably faster and stronger. So I think he could be taking a pretty big step forward. But to me, it's all going to come down to the shooting and whether that's developed for this coming season. Is he going to be getting those 28 minutes a night, or is he going to be playing 33? How do you see Yeager using him, and is he going to be just controlling everything this season?
All eyes are on De'Aaron Fox this season here in Sacramento. One thing that the Kings have lacked since the DeMarcus Cousins trade, which every team needs to be successful in today's NBA, that's a star. De'Aaron Fox has the best opportunity and possibility to be the star and be the leader for this team going forward. When he was drafted last season, even though he was drafted at fifth and Marvin Bagley was drafted at second, the expectations are so different between the two, because when De'Aaron Fox was drafted at fifth by the Kings, they were looking at him as the star, the future, the leader of this team going forward, and that still is the case. De'Aaron has taken it upon himself, like I mentioned with the Chris Paul comments earlier on, to be the leader, to be the captain of this team, and I would be shocked, I would be very surprised if he wasn't the guy leading this team in minutes throughout the season. He's going to be starting right out the gate, barring injury. He's going to be playing on a nightly basis, and I expect him to be playing a lot of minutes on a nightly basis. It'll be interesting to see how the backup situation goes between Yogi Ferrell and Frank Mason. But for De'Aaron Fox specifically, he is the guy that if anybody is going to really break out on the Sacramento Kings, it's going to be him. We saw his ability late in the season last year to close out games and be clutch, which is good. You want to see him add an ability to come out of the gate just as hot and just as strong and be able to be that leader. And then, like you said, with his play from the California Classic, we saw the improvements that he's already been making. Someone that's very difficult to stay in front of, someone who I think is, his assist numbers are going to be another area of the stat column to pay attention to with him. I think they can definitely be on the rise. He's added, certainly his basketball IQ has improved. He's slowed himself down. A lot of times last year, you saw him maybe in the open court or in the half court offense get a little bit out of control and try and do too much and either get blocked or lose the ball going towards the rim. I think that's something that he's improved on. Also, I would expect to shake off the rookie mantra a little bit. I would expect him to be able to get to the line more consistently than he was able to last year. The outside shot is a massive question mark. He took a couple of them in the California Classic in that one game, if I'm not mistaken. I think he hit one. He's always had a good-looking shooting stroke. It's just getting them to drop. I don't expect a 40% three-point shooter this year. But if he can add the ability to knock down one three a game in three attempts, then that's just another step in the right direction towards becoming the star that the Kings so desperately need.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he does lead this team in minutes. I think he is more aggressive. I think his percentages do increase. Yahoo's got him ranked 167th. I think that's way too low. He's a guy that should be knocking on the door of that top 100, a really strong late-round point guard type of a player. He could average 16-6 this season. Maybe he gets to 1.5 steals. We know he's an aggressive defender. It didn't translate into good steal numbers as a rookie, but if that pushes up and does a big leap like Buddy Hield's steal numbers did last season and gets to 1.6 or 1.7, then you're talking about a top 70, top 60 type of a guy who you're taking at the back end of a draft. And I think that he could develop there. He's a real key guy to watch. And I think he's going to be that guy who's got that most, maybe, he might not be the best fantasy player on this team, but I think he's got the potential to be that guy, especially when you can get him quite late in drafts. The next guy, Matt, is Bogdan Bogdanović, who I thought was the Kings' best player last season. He did pretty much it all. He hit threes, he handled the ball, he played a point guard, he played up at the four, he can defend at a decent rate, he was fairly efficient, shot close to 40% on his threes, 39% on his threes. A really strong year, the 131st ranked player, but still, he only played 28 minutes per night as Jaeger continued to keep everyone's minutes down low. I expect Bogdan in his second season to see a slight uptick in minutes again, and he's going to be that strong late round type of a guy, but maybe he doesn't have quite the upside of, say, someone like De'Aaron Fox. What did you make of Bogdan's rookie season, and where does he take that step forward this year?
I think you're absolutely spot on with basically everything you said. If you're looking for a consistent guy that's going to get you scoring and points on a nightly basis, not just in the just stat columns overall, he's going to give you basically the same thing every single night. The major question mark with Bogdan Bogdanović, now he's 26 years old, even though he's just entering his second season, is how much better can he get?
Yeah.
The only major jump that I can see him making, to answer your question, is if he's more aggressive shooting the ball and on the offensive end of the floor. I love him as a floor general. I love him as a facilitator. He's easily the smartest player on this team right now. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, especially with the departure of Garrett Temple. So he's someone that his teammates lean on consistently for guidance, for judgment, a role that I would like to see De'Aaron Fox embrace and maybe take on a little bit more. If that is the case, if De'Aaron Fox is able to be more of a floor general than he was last year and take some of that responsibility off of the shoulders of Bogdan Bogdanović to where he can look to be a spot-up three-point shooter, look for someone to be in the corner in transition to adapt and take more of a Manu Ginobili-type role instead of the Tony Parker-type role that he took last year. That is the best-case scenario, in my opinion, for getting the most out of Bogdan Bogdanović this year. I would have loved to see him shoot more. I would have loved to see him play more. He's the major question mark for me out of my starting five in the rotation because we don't know really where Jaeger is going to play him. Is he a true two? Can he play the three? Based off of what the Kings did this summer in free agency, they seem to be pretty confident rolling him out as a three consistently. Although, does that hurt you on the defensive end of the floor? Are they really going to play Buddy and Bogey big minutes a night together? What if that's potentially a defensive liability? There's a lot of question marks around how many minutes he could be getting, but if he's not getting close to 30 a night, I think there's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. He does run so many things well, but again, they just have real issues with that three position and who's going to play there. We'll get to a little bit more about the three in a second. In terms of some value picks on this team for fantasy, Heald is ranked 152nd on ESPN, Bogdanovic 139, and Nemanja Bjelica at 281. I think all of those guys have some value. Bjelica is more of a deeper league guy, but Heald should smash that number. Whereas on the bust side of things, Bagley at 69 and Corley Stein at 75. I think both of those guys will struggle to get anywhere near that sort of a number. Yahoo, the numbers are pretty okay on Yahoo. Heald's probably a little bit low at 71, but it's not an egregiously low situation for him. But let's talk about that small forward spot now, Matt. Justin Jackson, someone who many people seem to like. I wouldn't count myself in that group, but he had a fairly successful summer league as a high volume scorer. But to me, what he seems to do is when he scores in these big amounts, and he had a few games like this last season, he did it on like 80% shooting. But he does nothing else.
Yep.
He gets no rebounds. He doesn't pass. He gets no steals. He doesn't block. He doesn't get to the line. He does nothing. And when you're surrounded by Heald and Fox and Bogdanovic and Bagley, you're not going to be that volume scorer guy. And so where does that leave him? Do you or do the Kings view him as maybe an answer there to start at small forward? Because I just can't see it happening.
Absolutely not. The best case scenario for Justin Jackson consistently to be a part of this team with his skill set going forward is a volume scorer off the bench when the Kings need to give Buddy Hield and Bogdanovic a breather. You're looking at maybe a breakout game of 15, 20 points every once in a while in 15 to 20 minutes off the bench. Even that 20 minutes seems high for him. He is not a starter, and as great as he showed improvement in summer league this year, he also had a very impressive summer league his rookie season. We saw what that ended up being. Everything you talked about is exactly the same thing that we saw this summer, right? He put up the scoring numbers. He was the Kings' best scorer consistently in summer league, which is great, but he did nothing else. Yep. Literally nothing else. No rebounds, no assists, nothing. It was scoring the basketball. If the ball was in his hands, he knew it was either going up or he was passing it out and the Kings were resetting. That is the same case. He's very one-dimensional, except with different ways to score the basketball. That's something the Kings can certainly use off of the bench, but he will never be a successful small forward in this NBA. I hate to say it because I love the guy. He's a great kid. He's also, in terms of body and skill set and athleticism, the most small forward-esque player on this roster. He's a true small forward, I guess you could say, compared to everybody else. But his skill set's just not there. He doesn't do enough to be a starting small forward. I would be surprised to see him get more than 15 points a night as a volume scorer off the bench.
I'll give you this question. I don't know if you've got the numbers in front of you, but I hope you don't so you can make a guess of it. So in summer league, he played 32 minutes a night. What do you think, in terms of combined rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks, do you think he was over, under a combined 5 of those per game?
Oh, he's under.
Yeah, he was. He was at, let's work out the number, he was at 4.6 combined rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks, which is nonsense. That is so, in 32 minutes, that is so low. 3.3 rebounds, 0.6 assists, 0.6 steals and 0.1 blocks, and only shot 32% from three as well. So you need him to be in a role where he's getting a 25% usage and scoring 15 points to even be remotely close to being a fantasy valuable player, because he does nothing in any of these other areas, and I don't see any of that changing. One guy they did bring in, Matt, after a false start, I guess, with him signing with the Philadelphia 76ers, was Nemanja Bjelica, who played the three somewhat last year, replacing Jimmy Butler when he was hurt. Ideally, he's a four, but do you think there's a chance that they could go with him at the three over Bogdan Bogdanovic, or at least play him in those backup minutes there? Because he did show some ability to hold down that position last season.
The only chance of that happening is if Bogdanovic proves to be a defensive liability at the three. If he's getting blown by or out-muscled and beaten consistently on a nightly basis at the three spot, that's the only way I see Nemanja Bjelica plugging that hole. And even then, does Nemanja Bjelica, other than size, does he do any better than what Bogdanovic can do, staying in front of talent at the small forward position? Bjelica is someone that the Kings have been looking for a long time, believe it or not. A true blue stretch four that is so valuable in the NBA today, which is where I think his major value is going to be, even if they're playing him at the three spot. He's probably still going to play like a stretch four, even when they play him at small forward, because I would not be surprised if he's playing at the same time as a combination of Kosta Kufos and Harry Giles, or Willie Cauley-Stein and Marvin Bagley. That's where I can see him working in. I don't see him being a starter on this team. They may be able to lean on him sometimes if barring injuries or anything like that takes place. But Bogdan Bogdanović, in my opinion, is the best option and the smartest option and the option the Kings will go for consistently as the starting three.
Where does Bielitsa fit in then? If he's not going to be playing much at the three, like we've got Bagley that's starting at the four, Harry Giles perhaps starting there. So what sort of role is he playing? Is it 20 minutes a night? Is it in every night part of the rotation? Where's he going to fit in here?
Most likely, I would say he gets minutes on a nightly basis. We'll have to wait and see. I would expect him to play more as a backup three. I still think he's more of a viable option, even with Justin Jackson's ability to score off the bench. Like we talked about, Bielitsa can still score from three-point range and can do more in terms of rebounds and on the defensive end of the floor. So I can see Bielitsa getting a lot of time as a backup three if the Kings decide to go big. It'll be interesting to see with their bench unit and their rotations if they continue to play fast for all 48 minutes and how Bielitsa fits into that. But with the logjam at the small forward position, I don't see how much time or where Bielitsa is going to be able to work himself in at the four spot without the sacrifice to either Kosta Kufos or Willie Cauley-Stein. Maybe post-trade deadline we see more Bielitsa at the four. But if you were to ask me right now where I would play him, it would be in a backup three role.
The other guy that people are really interested in on this team, and it's a guy we've been hearing a lot of buzz about through summer, is Harry Giles. Of course, we didn't see him last season recovering from knee injuries, but all the talk is that the Kings are super high on him. He's burning up his off-season workouts. He looked okay at summer league. I thought he looked better than anticipated, which is great to see him on the court. Still had some struggles with the shot, but... Yeah, what sort of role are they still going to be taking it easy on him after missing a whole season, playing in those limited minutes? Or, yeah, as you mentioned earlier, there's a chance that maybe they do start him next to Willie Cauley-Stein. And where do we look at him in terms of role for this season?
I tell you what, the hype is real for Harry Giles here in Sacramento, and he only built upon that with his play in Summer League. He wasn't the most consistent in Summer League, which there's still going to be some question marks there. With his size, I do still believe he's going to have to put on weight, so he might get off to a little bit of a slow start. But by the end of the season, if Harry Giles isn't starting in some capacity, either at the four or at the five, I'll eat my hat. I don't see a way, unless he just doesn't live up to the hype or he gets hurt again, that Harry Giles doesn't consistently work his way into the starting lineup for this roster going forward. Harry Giles is just an effort, a hustle, an energy guy that commands not just respect, but the effort of everybody playing with him and around him. He's a stat sheet stuffer naturally. He's going to go out and do everything. He's not going to explode in any one category. You're probably not going to see a 16-rebound night or a 25-point night too often, but he's going to get you a block or two a night. He's going to get you 8 to 10 rebounds, depending upon how much time he's playing. His passing ability is actually what many have said is his best asset, so we'll have to wait and see maybe in the high post how De'Aaron Fox works with him and how the two play off of one another, or how many times Harry Giles kicks out to an open Buddy Hield or Bogdan Bogdanović for a wide open three, gets an assist that way. We'll just have to wait and see with that. But if you're looking for someone that has the capability of being able to fill every stat column, Harry Giles is your guy, and he's going to be someone that I am expecting to get a lot of minutes and a lot of time in the starting lineup towards the end of the season.
I hadn't really considered him as an option as a starter on this team, so that'll be interesting to see how that works out. Yahoo has him ranked 560th. I feel pretty confident that he's going to beat that number, considering there aren't that many players in the NBA. But whether he can get inside the top 200 is going to depend on whether he's playing 18 a night or whether he's playing 25 minutes a night. But as you said, he can block shots at a pretty good rate. He's a very strong rebounder. Yeah, the shooting is still a work in progress, and he's a bad free throw shooter. So there are some concerns in that type of an area. But if that opportunity arises for him to develop that chemistry with Bagley or play alongside Cauley-Stein, and if Jaeger really does go with, hey, you know what, these are our top three guys, and push Bielitsa to fourth and Randolph and Kufos to fifth and sixth, yeah, then there is that opportunity. But of course, all this talk about these big men and this potential rotation, it leaves Scalabissier out in the cold. Is he done in Sacramento?
I think so. Now, we've seen all of a sudden the emergence of these pictures and these videos, and I encourage your listeners, and you, if you haven't checked it out, there are all of a sudden these pictures coming out over the last 48 hours and videos of Scalabissiere's workout regime. He's now got a beard. I mean, this guy has put on a massive amount of weight. He looks completely different, unrecognizable even. I encourage you to go out and check out those pictures and those videos that have been put out there. He's clearly put on weight and clearly put on muscle, which is fantastic, which is something he needed to do because his first 2 years in the league, he was, I guess, a true four, a stretch four, but he didn't have enough of a consistent outside shot, and he wasn't strong enough to really be able to battle for rebounds. He's always had the hustle and the energy and the tenacity, but never really the strength. It seems like he's added that, but his door and window here in Sacramento may have already closed. I want to backtrack a little bit, if I can. One more thing about Harry Giles and his dynamic with Marvin Bagley is a lot of Harry Giles' playing time and even Scalabissiere's playing time is going to result in what Marvin Bagley ends up being. In my opinion, I think Marvin Bagley, even though Vlade made his offhanded comment that he can play the three at times, which take that for what you want, he's more of a five to me, more of the replacement of Willie Cauley-Stein than he would be a four, which means Harry Giles, who I compare a lot to Chris Webber here in Sacramento, is going to be that guy that fills that four spot. So if Harry Giles then takes that four spot, maybe there's a spot there as a backup four for Scalabissiere. If it's going to be a Willie Cauley-Stein, Marvin Bagley pairing at the five, it's also confusing. They have a lot to work out there. But in my opinion, the window for Scalabissiere is all but closed here in Sacramento. There are not going to be very minutes to be had for him next season.
One last question before I let you go, Matt. Who will be the primary backup point guard, Frank Mason III or Yogi Ferrell? Mason, I thought, handled himself pretty well when given that opportunity last season. Of course, his season was impacted by some foot and heel issues during the year. Only played 52 games, but I thought he played well in his 19 minutes per game. But Yogi Ferrell came to Sacramento, much like Bielitsa, after backing out on an initial deal with the Dallas Mavericks, with the impression that he was going to be that backup. So is that how you think it goes?
To me, it's going to be the guy who is able to come off the bench, relieve De'Aaron Fox, and keep the pressure and keep the fast pace going, which is why I lean more towards Yogi Ferrell than I do Frank Mason. I love Frank. I like what he brings. He's inconsistent for me as a scorer. Also, we saw him struggle in summer league as a floor general after De'Aaron Fox got hurt, quotation marks. We don't know necessarily what happened. He played his one summer league game at the California Classic, and then you didn't see him for any other of the two games or anything in summer league. You saw Frank Mason a lot, though, and you could immediately see the draw-off from night one with how well Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles played alongside De'Aaron Fox to how much they struggled alongside an offense run by Frank Mason. My edge is with Yogi Ferrell. I think he's going to be able to come in to keep the offensive tempo. I think he's a better shooter than Frank Mason. It might be a battle between the two of who is a better distributor. But if it were me right now, I'm giving the nod to Yogi Ferrell.
All right. That's some very interesting things came out of this podcast today with you, Matt. The talk about the Giles-Bagley front court, the expanded role for Bud Hield, the increase in pace, something that all fantasy owners are going to want to pay attention to, especially that stuff with Hield and that way that front court runs out. Matt, thank you for coming on the podcast. And can you let us know, A, where people can find you and find your work and what's happening on Locked On Kings?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can check me out every single day, weekdays, on Locked On Kings, the Locked On Kings podcast. We've been tackling a little bit recently who is Willie Cauley-Stein, and if you go back to the last couple of podcast episodes of the last couple of weeks, a lot of great interviews with Kings analysts, some inside information about what the Kings potentially tried to do in regards to Michael Porter Jr. on draft night. You can check all of that out. We also have some great stuff planned, some interviews coming as we approach training camp on Locked On Kings. You can also follow me on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK if you are interested there as well. It's a really exciting and fun time, actually, in Kings land to watch the Sacramento Kings team play because the kind of the restraints of having a top pick, believe it or not, as bad as this may seem, have been taken off us a little bit. So next year, wins finally are super important. People are really paying attention to it. And if this team plays up to their potential, which is fast-paced, they're not going to win a lot of games, but they're going to be fun to watch in some capacity. So we're definitely excited about that.
Go and check out Locked On Kings and pay attention to Sacramento because there are some things definitely changing here. And hopefully Jaeger can fully commit to using these young guys. Matt, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, my friend. Thank you.
Guys, make sure you are subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. 5 stars. That's always the way to go. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Iman Shumpert.